good afternoon, everyone. My name is Stan. I'm a postdoc at UC Irvine, and this is work done in collaboration with Immunent and Ghent University from Belgium. So everyone who reads the news on the interweb has probably already seen headlines like this one reporting about critical memory vulnerabilities in Microsoft software. You also see these for Apple software, Firefox, Chrome, and every now and then you even see headlines like this for software that is known to be very secure, like Adobe Flash Player. So I'm guessing most people have at some point wondered if there's nothing we can do about this, because this problem has been around for almost 20 years now. And indeed, there are a couple of things we could do. So first of all, we could just get rid of C and C++ and write all of our programs in type-safe languages like Rust. But it doesn't look like that's going to happen, because we have way too much legacy software laying around, and it takes too much time, it takes too much effort to port all of that software to something like Rust. We could also sort of embed type safety into our C and C++ programs by applying compile time transformations like softbound or sets, but those really slow down your program by up to 2x. So type safety is off the table. So another thing we could do is apply mitigations to our programs. And there's two types of mitigations broadly. So there's integrity-based mitigations like control flow integrity that try to enforce the integrity of your program. There's also randomization-based mitigations like address space layout randomization. And they try to create diversity so that the same attacks do not affect, attack a lot of programs. The problem is that we've also been working on these mitigations for a long time, and people keep finding ways to bypass them. So a third solution, which I'll be talking about today, is called multivariate execution environments, or MVEs. And MVEs can significantly boost the effectiveness of mitigation techniques. And all they ask in return is a little bit of additional system load. So what does an MVE look like? Well, an MVE is an environment in which two or more variants of the same program run in parallel on the same inputs. And these program variants are semantically identical, but they have different mitigations applied to them. Or they have the same mitigations applied to them, but these mitigations are configured differently. And in an MVE, there is some sort of mechanism that compares the behavior of all program variants. And if there's any divergence in the behavior, then the whole environment will be shut down. And to see why this makes sense from a security standpoint, we have to look at what a simple memory corruption attack looks like. So suppose that I have this terrible C program that has a function main, which calls a function foo. And foo, at line one, it allocates a fixed size buffer on the stack. And at line two, there's a get s function call that reads user provided input into this buffer, but it doesn't do any bounds checking. So if we look at what this program looks like in memory, it will probably be something like this. So the blue rectangle is the executable code of the program. And then the green rectangle is the stack. We have this fixed size buffer on the stack. And we also have a return address, which after the get s call returns on line two, is supposed to point at main plus two. But if an attacker comes along and he feeds too much data into that buffer, then he can overwrite that return address. And he can make the program do anything he wants. For example, spawning a new shell. And the attacker can also chain multiple calls together to create a really complex attack. And this is just one example of a memory corruption attack. But in one way or another, they always come down to overwriting a bunch of pointers to achieve attacker-chosen behavior. So going back to that MVE example, we now have a program on the right side with the executable code all the way on the top. Then we have a program on the left side, and the executable code of this program on the left side does not overlap with the executable code of the program on the right side. And if we have this return address on the bottom, and if these programs run undisturbed, then main plus two will obviously point at the right main plus two. But if an attacker comes along and he injects a payload into these two program variants, then at the payload at the right side might work because all of these return addresses point to valid attacker-chosen code. But since it's the same input, the same payload will not work for the variant on the left side because all of these return addresses point at non-executable pages. And so in this case, we will see a crash, and this program will stop, and this our monitoring mechanism will detect the divergence. In some cases, we simply see some divergence, not necessarily a crash. So how does an MVE work specifically? Well, we have a monitor, which usually lives in its own process, and this monitor starts and runs a couple of program variants, and it runs them in parallel, and it makes sure that the system calls coming from these variants are executed in lockstep. So what does that mean? It means that whenever the variants execute a system call, like in this example, when they execute a BRK call, they are suspended by the monitor, and the monitor will at this point compare the system call numbers and the arguments. That's how it compares the behavior. In this case, it's just a BRK call. The number matches, the argument matches. So the monitor will resume both program variants. It will allow the system calls to return, and the programs can continue running. But something very interesting happens when there's an input-output operation. The end user of the system obviously doesn't want to see that there's more than one variant of the program running. So what we do in this case is we only allow one of the I/O operations to enter to go into the kernel. And when this operation returns, the monitor will copy the results of this operation into any address space in which the operation was not executed. So in this case, the program at the right side did not execute the syswrite call. We just copy the results, and we resume both programs, and both programs will think that they did execute the operation. So a lot of people are probably wondering, isn't this really slow? And it turns out it's not very slow, because for the most part, if you have enough resources, these programs can run at native speed. The only problem in this design is, as I said, this monitor lives in its own process, because it needs to be fully isolated from the variants. But an unfortunate side effect of that is that system call interception is very slow. This is also a problem that you see in debuggers. So and the reason why it is so very slow is because if you intercept a system call from an external process, then you need to context switch to that external process. And context switching comes with page table swapping, TLB invalidations, and so on, and it brings the performance down to its knees. So much so that if you have variants that do nothing but executing system calls, so just a tight loop with simple system calls like getPID, then this will slow down up to 300x. So that's the security-oriented MVE design. So it's very secure, but it's super slow if there's a lot of system calls. There's an alternative design that was explored in the past couple of years, and this was mainly done for reliability, so fault tolerance and stuff like that, but not really for security. And in this alternative design, we embed the monitor into the variants themselves. So that way, they can intercept system calls before they enter the kernel. And there's no context switching, no TLB invalidations, not any of that stuff. So this is really fast. And so this monitor, you still have to coordinate these two variants because obviously you still only want one I/O operation to go through to the kernel, so they need some sort of communication mechanism. And what most people do is they create a shared ring buffer that is visible to all variants, and the master variant, which in this case is the one at the left side, the master variant can copy data into this buffer, which is then copied over to the slaves. The problem with this design is that it's not secure at all, because if an attacker comes along, he could just execute system calls directly and completely bypass that monitor. Alternatively, he could also tamper with the data in that shared buffer, and that way he could feed different inputs to all variants, which kind of defeats the purpose of the MVE. So this this situation, so this the one design that is very secure but really slow, and this alternative design that's really fast but not secure at all, was the motivation for our work. So in our paper, we present Riemann. And Riemann is the first MVE that combines both approaches. And Riemann has a cross-process monitor, so the slow but very secure one. And this cross-process monitor, which I'll refer to as CPMon from now on, so CPMon handles security-sensitive system calls, such as open. And then we have an in-process monitor, which handles non-security-sensitive system calls, such as getPID. And Riemann supports configurable relaxation policies. So the relaxation policy defines which system call should be handled by which monitor. And there's several ways in which you can configure these relaxation policies. So for example, you could say that getPID should unconditionally be handled by IPMon. Or syswrite should only be handled by IPMon if it operates on non-socket files. Alternatively, you could also implement a probabilistic policy in which you you let IPMon handle system calls if they repeatedly get approved by CPMon. But we did not implement this third policy. So before I can discuss what each component in Riemann does, I have to show you how Riemann is initialized. So when the CPMon sets up, forks off these variants, and it sets up IPMon by LD preloading them. And before IPMon can start intercepting system calls, the kernel needs to be aware of the fact that IPMon is there. So we have to register it. And we added a small extension to the PR control system call so that you can register IPMon at runtime. And the argument for this call is a list of system calls. And each system call in this list should be redirected to IPMon from that point onwards. And the system call can only ever succeed if the kernel can successfully report it to CPMon first. So if the external, the slow but secure monitor, does not agree with that list of system calls, so if it does not agree with the policy, then it can simply reject it. And then the program runs without IPMon. So what does each component do? Well, first of all, we have a system call broker. And the system call broker is a really small kernel component. It's less than 100 lines of code. And it intercepts every system call as it enters the kernel. And it will forward the system call to the appropriate monitor based on the active relaxation policy. And then this monitor can then resume execution of that system call. And at this point, the system call broker steps in again, and it will authenticate that resumed system call, and it will detect tampering. And if there has been any tampering at all, then the system call will go through CPMon. So then we have IPMon, which is our fast but not so secure monitor, which we did harden. That's what I'll talk about later. So IPMon can execute forwarded calls without intervention from the cross-process monitor, and it can replicate the system call results through the shared buffer. Then we have CPMon, which is a standalone monitor. It can run it on its own, but if IPMon is loaded, then it provides a fast path for some of the system calls. So how did we harden this system? Well, first of all, we made sure that IPMon's privileges cannot be abused. And specifically, we made sure that every system call that is executed by IPMon has to pass through the broker first. And the way we do this is every time the broker intercepts a system call, it generates an authentication key. And it passes that to IPMon as a hidden system call argument, and it will always stay in a designated register. And this authentication key must be intact when IPMon ultimately resumes that system call. If it's not intact, then the system call will be forwarded to CPMon. Then we make sure that the monitor data in the shared ring buffer cannot be tampered with. And the way we do this is, because we have this indirection through the system call broker, our user space, our variants themselves do not need to be aware of the existence of IPMon or of that shared buffer. So we don't store any pointers to the shared buffer in user space. And when IPMon is invoked, it obviously needs a pointer to the shared buffer. So what we do is we use the same mechanism that we used for the authentication keys. So we load a pointer into a designated register. And this pointer when IPMon returns into the kernel, this pointer is cleared. And then finally, we made sure that no sensitive values, so the pointer to that shared ring buffer and the authentication key, they're never leaked. And specifically, they're never leaked into memory or spilled onto the stack. And we constructed IPMon so that it has no indirect branches. So you cannot divert IPMon's control flow to malicious code to steal those sensitive values. So we ran a pretty extensive performance evaluation on a Linux 3.13 machine. We ran each benchmark with up to eight variants. And for the multi-threaded suites, we used four worker threads. And I don't have enough time to show you all of our results, so here are some highlights. So the spec CPU suite is quite boring from an MVE perspective because there's almost no benchmarks in there that execute a lot of system calls. But still, using Remon brings the performance overhead down from 6.37% to 3%. Then the Parsec 2.1 suite is a multi-threaded suite, and this suite features some benchmarks with really high system call density, so up to 300,000 system calls per second. And in this case, we see a clear performance gain, so from 22 to 11%. The same thing happens for Splash 2X, which is also a multi-threaded suite, so the performance overhead goes down from 29 to 10%. And then we ran a whole swath of server benchmarks, and for the server benchmarks, which is probably the most appropriate use case for an MVE, the overhead goes down from up to 1,200% to below 3.5%. So in conclusion, I talked about the existing security-oriented MVEs, which are secure but very slow if there's a lot of system calls. I talked about reliability-oriented MVEs, which are really fast but insecure. And I introduced Remon, which is fast and secure. And I'd like to conclude by saying that Remon is now open source, and you can get it on the GitHubs. So, and I'll take any questions.
Hi, Fred Douglas, EMC. So I'm curious about the parallel invocations of these applications. So you said that you make sure that everything's identical. And so what do you do about anything that could possibly be non-deterministic, or things like getPID, if you actually want it to be able to operate on a different number? Do you have something that says it's okay for these things to be different?
In some cases, we allow some divergences. There's a whole section about non-determinism in the paper. So there's non-determinism in system call results, there's non-determinism that arises due to signal handling, there's non-determinism because of multi-threading, and we have solutions for all of these things, but if there's any specific one that you need to know about, then I can tell you. Okay. So in getPID, we just return the same result.
Okay, any other question?
Yeah, just one. Rick Farrow. So it's your... I can see by your performance numbers, your latency doesn't get much worse, but you're still using two cores to do this.
Yes.
So essentially, you've doubled the load on the system.
That's true. Yes, so this is not something you can use for all applications unless okay. you over-provision.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, no, I'll ask a question. How about memory? So since two versions are running, it's the same for memory, right? So you're taking twice the memory.
Almost the same. So for the most part, you can still share code pages, but those are a small fraction of the total memory that is consumed by every program. So
right. So the if the data pages are large, then you'll have an issue.
Yes.
So if the memory is not sufficient, you made it actually run much slower.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you.